All right, everybody, and welcome to the 9 Years Podcast, episode 281, a local bus route for Kingston residents. I am Nick Draper. I am joined, as always, with the face, by the face of the BBC Sport website, Mr. Stuart Deakins. Stu and I are both absolutely knackered this week, and we don't have a format. So where this podcast goes, nobody knows. But Stu, I'm going to suggest it's not going to go to a very good place, given our current form and given the two defeats in our last two games. But before we get on to and dissect the 3-2 defeat at the Valley on Saturday and the 1-0 reverse at home to Rotherham on Tuesday night, let's look at the attendance for Tuesday evening, which was, what, 6,300?
That was, I hadn't seen what it had been. That was the official figure, yeah?
Yeah, I will get the exact figure.
Sorry, I wasn't questioning on that. It was just, 6,387.
Yeah, okay. So, and what, 550 in the away end? So, about 5,800 in the home ends.
Yeah.
Playing top of the league. Always a big occasion. Now, I will caveat this. We are playing a bigger club in historical terms on Saturday, when Sunderland visit. So some people might be thinking, though, of the two, they're just going to come down for Sunderland, which is fair enough, Saturday as well. It was the fourth of four consecutive Tuesday night games. But I thought the attendance against Cheltenham was low the previous Tuesday, and it's got lower, even though we're playing the team top of the table. And I have to say, if I'm being very, very honest, four consecutive Tuesday night games. Absolute killer. Never want to revisit this ever again. Absolute nuisance for my work routines and getting stuff done. But I don't blame people for not going, because it's been hard work. And we've had those four Tuesday night games and a couple of Saturdays against Morecambe and Shrewsbury. No wins. What do we have in those three? On those three Tuesday night games, two goals, both against Cheltenham.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
2 points. Portsmouth a point and Cheltenham a point. And it felt... I suppose the point I'm making here is that when you play the team top of the league, it's always a, you always get a bit of a sense of occasion, don't you? Because you think, okay, we'll test ourselves. We'll try and cause a bit of an upset. The crowd's always up for it. There's a real good atmosphere trying to get on the opposition's backs and things like that. None of that applied on Tuesday night. It felt like we all turned up. Those of us that did come, we turned up and we were just waiting to get beaten. And that was a horrible feeling. But it's true. I can't think how else to describe it.
No, you're spot on. When you look at it, when you look at the amount of games you've had, especially when you start the sort of, what was it, a trilogy? Because that's three, isn't it? When you started the sort of, I don't know, the schedule.
Quadruple.
That's the
quadrant.
When you looked at the schedule, you probably, if you were a fan who maybe didn't have a season ticket and was buying game, even if you were a season ticket holder, you probably did look and go, it's Rich Pompey. Yeah, one's a go. And then, let's be fair, once you go past there, Cheltenham. I think also our form, even though I thought we played well against Pompey and got the draw, and obviously, Ipswich were just too good for us in the end. We're not as exciting. And I think you just pick your games, don't you? I'm looking here, attendance-wise, Pompey, just over 8,000, Ipswich, 8-1. So, yeah, they rightly were attended well. But, of course, away fans obviously inflated the attendances. But, yeah, Tuesday night, I felt empty. And let's also be fair, we're including season ticket holders, even if they don't turn up. So it might even be less than 5.5. It's so difficult in that round, isn't it, to actually work out what is a low attendance, because it's like Kings Meadow, you could tell, couldn't you? It's very difficult with Plough Lane.
Yeah, well, I mean, the point that you make about season ticket holders being included in the attendance. On Monday evening, my niece decided that she wanted to come. Normally she works in hospitality, but she wasn't doing that for the midweeks. She thought she'd come along. And I have a debenture seat that I wasn't using and I hadn't bought the ticket for. So I looked online to see if it was still available, because we missed a deadline for getting it, and it was still there. I reckon there was about half a dozen seats in my block of the West End for sale. And this is block, 107? In the, it's the same block as the press box.
The posh block.
I'd say it's adjacent to the posh block. Yeah. Posh it's block a, adjacent.
It's a great view, to be fair.
It's not bad. It's not bad. But yeah, so about I saw half a dozen seats available, and yet when we got there on Tuesday night, empty. Block was empty. I had empty seats to the left of me, empty seats to the right, and there I was, stuck in the middle of the block, looking with a great view at what was a poor performance. But yeah, so just a strange one that the attendance was so low. We'll see if my theory about Sunderland bringing fans out on Saturday rings true, because, you know, what's this? Is this their fourth season? This is their fourth season in League One.
I think so. And let's be fair, Rotherham, top of the league, but they're just not an attractive name. And that's nothing, no disrespect to Rotherham. But when you look at the names, you know, if you look at the games either side of that, you know, Pompey, Ipswich, Sunderland, still to come to us, Charlton, still to come to us later in the month, Rotherham just isn't an attractive draw. So, and also, I think you're right. I think people have accepted that this is going to be a real big challenge. And I agree with you. The atmosphere probably was the most subdued that I've sensed at Plough Lane.
Yeah.
And I get it, because Rotherham just suck the life out of you, but that's no disrespect to them. They're just a very, very good team.
Not the biggest name, as you say, not the biggest draw. However, many years ago, I had a Mega Drive. Did you have a Mega Drive, or were you a Nintendo person?
No, the Sega Mega Drive. Yeah, the Nintendo, yeah. I never got the hang of. The Sega Mega Drive, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I had a Sega Mega Drive. And there was one game we rented. This was Chris and I. We rented it from Blockbuster Video. And so I can't remember.
Can't believe at your age you remember Blockbuster Video.
I was very advanced 3-year-old. I understood far more than most 3-year-olds understand, and watched TV shows that probably 3-year-olds shouldn't have been watching. But yeah, I just remember this game. I wish I could remember what it was called, but it had like all the big teams. This was before the days where you'd have every single team in the country and possibly the world. You had about a choice of 16 teams, and obviously it was Manchester United, Arsenal, Liverpool, all the da-da-da-da, and randomly Rotherham United. And I don't... We just thought that someone who worked on the game, obviously, was a Rotherham fan, but I wish I could remember what that game was called. Anyway.
Wasn't that... just that was cartridge, wasn't it? That's where you put the cartridge into the set.
Cartridge,
it's mad, isn't it? It's mad when you think back, like, we played those games. Mm-hmm. I played, do you know what, for those of older people, obviously not yourself, Nick, but for those of who played on the Spectrum or the ZX81, I remember Match Day. I even put Match Day 2. And I think a little while ago, some of these apps, or they bring back old games, and I was like, I saw it. Mate, how did I get any enjoyment out of that game? Like,
simpler times.
Well, it was a very simple graphics. I think I could probably build that now, but yeah. Anyway.
Happier days, Stu. I said we've talked about this on the podcast this season. Play by mail. Those were great days.
Enjoyment you get out of play by mail. You wait a week for your...
That's brilliant. Oh, I love that so much. Sense of anticipation, delayed gratification, all these things are missing from modern day society, which I think Robbo agrees with me on, reading his programme notes on Tuesday night. And it was delightful. I was delighted to see that Robbo was actually in the programme. For the first time that I'd seen a programme since Bolton, the first home game, that Robbo had actually done the programme notes. I do get the idea of trying to mix it up sometimes, especially when you have a midweek game and a Saturday game. Sometimes the manager runs out of things to say, but I'd still think you'd want him. 23 home league games, you'd want him in at least 20 of them, I'd say. But anyway, and he made a point about social media and other things on the official website. In a week as well. Very excellent interview in term 5 because my grammar's gone to shit.
Excellent.
Very excellent. It's like when people start saying very dominant, I'm thinking, I'm not sure you understood what dominant means.
Yeah, just but extra dominant.
Yeah, doesn't work. No. Back onto football. Rotherham, poor attendance. Atmosphere was very flat. It was like we just thought we were waiting to get beaten. And first half, I thought actually we did okay. We restricted them. We went three centre halves. We changed the shape a little bit from the Charlton game. Lee Brown was unavailable, got knocked, so Nesta came in, but we moved him to left wing back and put Shea Alexander as a wing back. And we made it difficult for him. We said, look, try and break us. Essentially, Robbo said, let's try and get a 0-0 out of this. Is that unfair? That's what it felt like.
Yeah, it was an interesting one because it was a 3-4-3, but of course they can always fall back into a 3-5-2, can't they, and stuff. I actually thought the first half...
If I said 3-5-2, I do apologise. Because, yeah, yes, clearly it wasn't 3-5-2. It was, yeah, but...
But, you know, they can fall into... Yeah, you know, they can very easily fall into that and you can fall back in that defensive shape on that. But it was interesting, actually, because when Rotherham played three up, so actually it was three against three, so it was, you know, one against one, which... I was a bit worried when you looked at the ones against, you know, the individual battles, yeah. Grigg, Smith, and I can't remember who the other one was up top. But I thought we dealt well with it, actually. And we had a little bit of joy with Ayavasau, who was given their fullback, who looked decent, to be fair. But it was enough of an outball for them to worry about us. But I felt, though, I don't know about you, but I always felt set pieces, they were just so strong. I actually thought the goal would come from a set piece. It didn't in the end. But I would love to see what their set piece figures are because they, you know... I made a comment right at the end of the game. They were defending a set piece and they had literally, I think, about a line of nine people in it. So there was zonal marking rather than man to man. And I said to Rob next to me, it feels like the All Blacks are facing you. Like the side, you know, like you know, the All Blacks do their sort of like, yeah, in rugby. I was like, they are just huge.
But
first half, like I say, I thought we'd done well. I thought Dan Shoker had done well. And went into the break. I wouldn't say I was expecting us to win in the break, but I actually felt, you know what, we haven't conceded. That's not a bad half time.
Yeah. I would agree with you. I actually thought it suited us more because I thought they'd get a little bit frustrated. Because he did a good job. Dan Shoker was here. He was playing well. But then he came off at half time because of an issue. And that was a shame, but I don't think that changed the outcome of the game. I thought Rotherham just came out second half, and whoever was on the 11, we just had no answer to it. They just sort of bashed us into submission, really.
Yeah, I think that's spot on, actually. I think that just wore us down. When you think about it, beginning of the season, we were pretty proud of the fact that we looked a very fit side, and we should do because we've got lots of kids in there and energy wise. But I felt Rotherham kept the level there's times in the second half once they got the lead that they literally just boxed us in, and the energies every time there was a 50-50, they turned it into a 70-30 in their favour. Their determination, I must admit, I was really impressed by them. Their determination, fitness levels, was just, they will win the league. They will win the league. There's no doubt about that, in my opinion.
It's high standards and high expectations from them. Just before the half-time whistle went, there was a little bit of a miscommunication between two of their defenders going for a header. And as they were coming off the pitch, they were sort of just going back and forth about it. And it was such a minor thing. One player missed a header, so the other player had to come in and win the header, okay? But just those little details just showed me that the players were on it.
Yeah.
That they were looking after these tiny little details, because if you take care of the little things, then the big things take care of themselves. And you're right, it was the energy. Michael Smith, it just puts in a shift, doesn't he? Like, impossible to get the ball off him, but then he's working so hard to stop attacks building from our back as well.
Everything we want to see, isn't it? Let's be fair. Everything we want to see from our team. And don't get me wrong, we have seen on occasions in games, but just not that. You know, not that consistency. And you can imagine they are consistent because you look at the goals conceded, ridiculous stats.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, yeah, you're right. I think in terms of our energy and our application, we do have that Smith was showing. We do put that effort in and we put the yards in and stuff like that. But the strength and the quality that he has and just, I mean, there was even one, like you said, they were all huge, huge, like, athletes. And there was one where got into a one-on-one situation with, Ogbeni, the 11? They're sort of right.
Yeah.
Full-back, wing-back type. And he just block tackled him. I've never seen a block tackle like old school, proper, just stood up, took the ball cleanly, Ayoub went over, And it was like, oh. And then we all sunk back into our seats, like, disappointed. But one thing I do want to say about Will coming in. So Will came on for Dan Chocker, second half. And he got booked. His first touch was a taking down the... No, it was Lindsay, I think.
Yeah.
James Lindsay. And he took him out down the touchline. But do you know what that stemmed from? And this is what one thing I think we're struggling with at the minute. Is there was a ball on the halfway line. And Will could have gone steamed in, and I think he could have taken it. And he took a step to do exactly that, and then he hesitated, thought better of it, and retreated, and then got himself into trouble.
Yeah.
And it's those moments that I think we're seeing across the pitch from everyone, where earlier in the season, especially at the very start of the season, things were just happening. We were just making our minds up and almost playing instinctively, trusting our instinct. And now we're second-guessing ourselves. We're overthinking. We are taking a touch and then another touch. We're deliberating too long.
Yeah.
And that's a confidence thing. I can't think what else it is.
No, I think you're spot on. I think you're spot on. Because when... I think you can only compare the two teams you see on an evening, isn't it? And you're right. When Rotherham attacked, everything was on the front foot. Everything was touch, move, runners. We were chatting to... Obviously, we did the 9 years at TV on Tuesday night, and we had a few of the Rotherham fans in. And the guy was chatting to him, and he said, you know, they're known for their high press. And also, we like to high press. It should be an interesting battle. But they pressed in numbers and energy. And in the end, I think you're right. You know, I noticed how Marsh in midfield, he loves a 50-50, doesn't he? Absolutely loves a 50-50. But by the second half, he was losing 50-50s, as if they'd worn him down as well.
Yeah.
Which is something, because, you know, the energy levels of that guy is... And I felt that said it all, really, in terms of they wore us down. But, yeah, we just... Yeah, you know, in terms of we're not playing instinctively. You're right, we are starting to second-guess ourselves. We take a touch, I think there was an example of Paul Cannavale. He got into the midfield area, he took one touch and another touch, and he wanted another touch. You don't get three touches in the central midfield area. They actually, I think in the end, they had three players on him, got the ball... And they're off. So
yeah.
I think, do you know what? I think it was probably something what we're aiming for, if we're honest. That's sort of the level we're probably aiming for. I'm not saying we're anywhere near that or we're going to get there next season. But, you know, I think Rotherham were a good example of what it probably takes to get out of this division if we ever want to do it. But, yeah, I don't want to see them again.
No, Robert said on the podcast earlier in the season that they were the best team. Yeah, we played this season. We lost 3-0. Up at their place earlier in the season. That was a midweek game as well, for whatever reason. And yeah, we as you say, Stuart, we can't have any complaints. But
no.
The goal, when it did come, I know it's like you were just saying, it was one touch football. It was instinctive for them. They knew the runners. They knew what balls they wanted to play. They knew what runs they wanted to make. But the lack of pressure on the ball. Eventually, when it comes, it was really, if the life hadn't already been sucked out of us, it was when they took the lead.
Yeah, I've not watched a goal back, so I can only go on my memory. Do you know what? I've been terrible. Last three midweek games, I've not watched the goals back. I just didn't want to further my frustration at it result. But, you know, to be fair, I think a few people around me said Nest against Walker was at fault, but... Yeah, there's no press on the ball, and he either went with the runner, and the runner had gone. So by the time the player got the ball, the runner had gone. He'd lost his runner, and then there's no pressure on the ball. So it's a straightforward ball in behind him. And what I noticed was it Ladapo had come on? What I noticed when he came on was that they delayed their runs as well. So not that he delayed signing for us, didn't he? So he's good at doing that.
Well, I wouldn't say this, but it, unfortunately, it was Coyote, not...
Oh, was it not? Was that? I don't know. It's got a booming goal. That tells you everything you need to know about that. But what I noticed was that they were delaying their runs. So when the ball went out wide, they literally were running across defenders and then getting in front. And they'd done it a couple of times where Paul Cannavale and Will got caught on their heels. They just seemed to be on their toes all the time. And that's what it was. It was a run across a defender and a touch in. It was a very simple goal. Again, some people said to me, Nesta Guinness-Walker didn't run back. I sort of get that, But realistically, the move was so slick. But we've got to press the ball. If you're going to give players like that an easy pass, they're going to pick it. And the goal probably summed up. The goal probably summed up us at the moment. We just keep conceding goals, and there's errors. There's errors all over it, but forced in by a very good team.
Yeah, and we can touch on the Charm game very quickly when it comes to defensive errors. I think the last thing I'll say about Roman game is, well, two things. Number one, no shots in the second half from us. I don't think I've ever seen a 1-0 game that was as wide a difference as that one. That was a training ground game exercise for them, second half. And I can understand Robbo being very frustrated afterwards and calling. So, I wouldn't say calling the players out. That's not what he does. But he was honest after the game and said, "Yeah, that was nowhere near good enough. Even if you are playing top of the league team and as good as Rotherham are and as experienced as they are, because they've been in this league a few years and they've been doing this for a long time now under Paul Warne." The other thing, though, I've never watched that first half. As frustrating as the second half was from our performance, the first half, Stu, I swear to God, half of that half was standing around waiting for set pieces to be taken. There were so many corners and free kicks and throw-ins, and every single time that ball went dead, it seemed to take about 5 minutes before anything would actually...
There was no rush, was there? But then, do you know what? That's the experience of that team, isn't it? You know, they set things up, slow the game down. What, you know, if you think about us early in the season, because it's very difficult. I think we've got two teams, realistically, early season form and now where we are. But early season, we wanted things quickly, tempo really high, really high. Rotherham don't want that, and they didn't even allow us to do that. You're right, but they done it subtly in terms of. I don't think the referee at any time warned them for time wasted. So they didn't make it so obvious, but they did it. If that makes any sense. And they're the dark arts of the game, isn't it? That's where their experience tells. They didn't want us at any point to get a wind in our sails, not that we threatened that. And they just saw the game out. You're right. And there was one example that made me laugh. I think a player went off, he made a challenge, went off, was rolling the floor, obviously he's off the pitch, so the referee's like, "Well, we can play on," and all of a sudden he reappears fresh as a daisy. But people moaned, but I laughed, because it's just perfect gamesmanship. It's what a Graham Westie side at Stevenage would have done. But you remember, tactically they always went down on 60 something minutes, and it was a tactical timeout. Everyone went to the bench and had a tactical timeout, and it was always, everyone knew it was done. But they just did it all the time. So you have to say Rotherham, I come away from that thinking I've seen the champions of this league, but I've also seen the levels that we need to get to if we're gonna, threaten in years to come out of this league.
Rotherham, 5 consecutive wins in the division. We are stuck on 30 points, averaging a point per game. We talk about our early season form, Stu, but actually when you look at it, so you can say we've played two-thirds of our fixtures now. The first third, 15 games, we got 17 points. Second third, last 15, 13 points. But it is winless in, 11 in the league now?
11, I think,
We have... It's going to be a scrap. It's going to be a scrap, and we would be in the relegation zone now if it wasn't for Bolton scoring a 90-plus 14-minute equaliser against Morecambe on Saturday. So
yeah, and you know what? We the next 4 games we're at home to Sunderland, which could be a new manager bounce by then. They lost at Cheltenham on Tuesday evening, but then we got Bolton, who beat Sunderland 6-0, and it looked like they picked up a bit of form. I think they were a little bit in a false position from what we've seen of them, and then we go into a week of Gillingham away and Doncaster at home.
Yep.
Gillingham won another game 1-0. I worry about Doncaster. The reason I worry about them is because they might be playing with a freedom by then. If you look at teams that finish bottom, right, Doncaster, you look for their team, it doesn't feel a team that should be where they are.
It shouldn't be where.
You know, and I saw the game that they played up at Morecambe when they were 3-0 up at half time, and then they lost late on a 4-3 game. But that that first half, they were the Doncaster that I saw last season. And our home form just worries me a little bit. And if we, I know I'm being very negative here, but if we lose at Gillingham, that Doncaster game is tough again. And I don't know anyone who feels we can go to Gillingham on a Tuesday night and get anything.
No, as ridiculous as that sounds, when you look at the golf in our teams when we played earlier in the season, they got like a fluky draw out of nothing. But we should have. The gap between the two teams on that evening was massive, except for where it mattered, which is putting the ball in the back of the net. So it's you do start to worry about this Gillingham game coming up. I really do. Sunderland. Well, we'll talk about Sunderland now. So they've lost three in the spin now, which again bothers me because I don't see a team in fourth losing four on the spin. I think Plymouth might have done earlier in the season. They might have done.
But that was early on before they... Yeah, because when they come to us, they were then firing, weren't they, a little bit?
Yeah.
Because when Plymouth come down to us, we actually could have gone above Plymouth and gone into third place.
Yep. But you know what? Plymouth was the first game this season where a team had come and they'd done their homework on us and they stopped us playing and they wore us down. And I think we've seen a lot of teams figure that one out since then. But Sunderland, they say... No, still got temporary charge. Manager's still in temporary charge, looking for a permanent person to come in there. Lost. I mean, the thing is, Cheltenham. So we haven't won in 11. Cheltenham were on that same run before Tuesday night. And that run, they broke it against Sunderland. Now, again, is it likely that Sunderland in a week lose twice to teams ending 11-game winless runs? It's unlikely.
Do you know what worries me? If you look at Sunderland's form, they lost obviously against Cheltenham. They lost at home to Doncaster.
Yeah.
And then lost 6-0 away at Bolton. But before that, they then beat Pompey. So they are all over the place. And then before that, they lost at home 3-1 to Lincoln. So you just look at their form and it's just nuts. You just can't predict it, can you? On that side. But yeah, I hate you said that actually, because you're right. You can't see a team in the playoff positions, you know, in four. I think Cheltenham are a little bit different. I think Cheltenham, I look back at the highlights of that, and that the player they got alone from Tottenham was involved in all of it. And I haven't seen the highlight. Do you know what I mean? In terms of, just everything was involved with him. And I haven't seen the goals from the Cheltenham game, but I wouldn't be surprised if he had some influence. Did he score?
Didn't score, but he was involved and he got at least one assist.
Yeah, and that's the difference, isn't it? You know, that's the difference. They've gone out and it annoys me, right? Because we're in London, so why are we not getting a Tottenham loan? He's gone to Cheltenham. Although Cheltenham is a very lovely place. But it's a standard of loans, isn't it? And I just don't think our loans in this transfer window have been spot on, if I'm being honest with you.
Who are the loanies that played on Tuesday? A Blade, I think, came on. But he was the only one, isn't he? So Presley, we think, is still injured. Noma Bude, Lawrence is injured. The loans haven't really worked out.
And Thomas, was he on the bench or not at all?
I don't think he was on Tuesday, no. So,
but the problem is these kids are making their debut their league debuts. And we're in a relegation battle and... Do you know what? If we looked at any other team that were blooding youngsters who are making their league debut for them, we would go, that is a sign of trouble. That's where we are.
And technically, of course, Sam Cosgrove is a loanee. I keep forgetting that. But, first half I thought Cosgrove, I saw, and against Charlton, you can see what he brings. I think there's hope there. Couple more games, a bit more match fitness, got 90 minutes on Tuesday, getting up to match fitness. So there's signs there. Do you know who I thought was unlucky not to play on Tuesday was Ethan Chislett? It was odd that I'd in the games preceding that, I'd talked about the choice between McCormick and Chislett, and then neither of them actually played on Tuesday. McCormick came on later. I wonder if Jack Redoni gets a rest on Saturday, actually.
I think so.
Struggling a bit.
We're missing Woody, aren't we? We're missing Alex Woodchild. Mm. Although I didn't miss him, to be fair, on Tuesday night because he came up and visited us in the 9-year studio.
You saw more of him than most people would want to see.
Do you know what? I can see what he brings to a team, and that's not even being on the pitch. Like, I can see what he does. I can see how valuable he is in a change room. So for those who, he come up and so Rob Toohey comes up to do the team news and we embargo it to quarter two. Would he come up? And I was, as soon as I saw him, I'm like, oh, this is going to be trouble. Because you just could see the glint in his eye. He asked me if it was live, and I went, I would never record anything live with you around me. then he gave me, I said to him, you've been in the Charlton, we went to Charlton. He said, yeah, that's where all the real fans were, Stu. I didn't see it though. I'm like, he just slaughtered me within no time at all. and then he was doing a Mooney. And then he was doing some sort of weird, you know, like the thing where you were like walking down the stairs and you're not, but you know, that's what you're going down level.
As if you're going down the stairs, yes. Yeah. And you disappear from view, yes.
So he does that, and then Rob Toohey just loses it. We kept it in because there was no swearing and you couldn't see the shadow, thankfully, of Woody.
Well, you could see him, but
you couldn't see him do the Mooney, thankfully.
What he did, yes.
And then he does that walking down a stair trick, and then he goes, oh, I think I pulled a hammy, Stu.
Amazing. God.
But what I'm... Do you know what? I think... I've been around Woody a number of times, but you can just... I think you can see what you miss with him. Do you know what I mean? I can see as a captain, he's serious when he's on the pitch. But I think... As good as George Marsh has been, I think we've missed so much from Alex Woodyard. So hopefully he gets to play soon.
Mm. Fingers crossed. Touch wood. See what I did there? Woodyard. A bit of experience, you say, we're missing. Missed Lee Brown's experience as well on Tuesday night. But I think he held his hands up in the dressing room after Charlton for some poor marking at the set piece led to their winner, which is a bit of a... I'm always disappointed to see a header from a corner where the player doesn't jump.
I just thought he got done. I thought Charlton were really good at set pieces. Again, another big side. Yeah. Like, they just look huge. I just think he got done. I know he didn't jump, but it's one of those ones where he just gets tagged. He can't get up. The player's on him. He's not letting him jump. It's not a foul. And it does look rubbish, let's be fair. But he's just got tagged. He's got tagged. I think the only thing I've been frustrated about, if that was an Esther Guinness Walker, I'd have gone, okay, fair enough. But Lee Brown's been around a bit. So you don't expect him to get done like that as if he was a younger, inexperienced player. So that's probably where he's more frustrated himself that a man of his age, even though he's not like ridiculously old, is he? But he's a lot older than most of our players on the team.
He was a few years older than me, but yeah. I mean, Charlton, we won't expect to get anything out of it. Good game to watch by all accounts, but no joy. Connor Washington, I mean, that's the difference. That's the difference. Look, hey,
exactly. But
look, Connor Washington, Freddie Ladipo, who didn't even play on Tuesday, but, you know, on the bench. Will Grigg, Michael Smith.
Connor Chaplin just, on the bench for
Ipswich, who had James Norwood.
Top goal scorer from last year in our team on their bench.
Yeah, madness. All ridiculous. These strikers, they're all being stockpiled by top half teams.
What do you expect? And do you know what? It's not a defeatist attitude. It's just the plain truth of it. You know, when you look at the league table and you've got teams like Charlton in 13th, 14th, in a way, we're in you know, when you say the Premiership, it's made up of like three mini leagues. It feels like the League One is that, and we're in a mini league at the bottom, from probably 24th to 17th, 16th. You could probably say.
I think that's fair to say. Yeah.
That's what we're facing. Because you're right. When you name these strikers, it's just
scary.
Yeah, it's
ridiculous. And you look at even Cheltenham with Alfie May, who scored a fantastic goal. It must be said. If you get a chance, watch the highlights back from Cheltenham Sunderland. Excellent finish from Alfie May to win that game for them. But, I mean, just to put the cherry on the icing of that particular cake, Jermaine Defoe is visiting on Saturday.
I'd actually forgot about that. And they also got they've also got our ex-youth academy one that before our academy could sign up players, haven't they? They've got the... I just forget his name. They've got him from Celtic. What's his name? Oh, I will get it. Patrick Roberts.
Oh.
He went there as well. Did you not? I'm pretty upset. Yeah, I didn't see that.
He came on Tuesday night, the last 15 minutes, didn't start.
That's ridiculous.
Yep. I can't say anything more than that. I would not be surprised though if we stick with the three centre halves. I wonder if we'll stick with that. I don't know.
We can't keep mugging the formation around, can we? Because I thought we'd, you know what? I thought we looked solid. I felt comfortable with a three. I didn't feel comfortable with a three at Bournemouth. But I think Dan Shaka at the moment when he comes in, I think he's turning around opinion fans at the moment as well, isn't he?
Yeah, I thought he was excellent.
Exactly. So I wouldn't have a problem if he stayed at three at the back. The problem you get, if you keep changing your formation, then that shows you there's a bit of a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're searching for something, really.
You are. Quick scoreline prediction for Saturday?
No, that wouldn't do. Oh, I can't see us winning. My head tells me I can't see us winning. I'm going to go for a 0-0 draw.
I will go for a 3-3 draw because why not? Why not?
No comment, I just...
Oh, dear. Do you know what would have helped against Charlton, by the way? Lee Brown, with the winning goal, would have helped if he had a sensible squad number, because 55 is not a sensible squad number. And if we were playing in blue. So well done to Rotherham for playing in red, because I actually think that's the first time they've played in red when coming to play us. Every time I remember in my head playing Rotherham at King's Meadow, they were always in black or white or something. But no, they're actually in red, so fair play.
Just got me thinking about kits. Wickham have released a kit today, which is multicoloured, and I think it's obviously for one of the... I can't remember what it's called now. I should know, with Anne-Marie being involved in it, but it's literally multicoloured.
Is it for Joseph in his amazing Technicolour dream coats extended run?
It wouldn't look out of place on the stage, to be fair. But yeah, we've got a new kit coming out next season, isn't it?
Yes. Sad. We don't have Puma anymore, do we?
I don't believe we do. I'm going to stay away from that conversation.
I don't know. This is just a rumour I heard.
We have a new home kit.
We do have a new home kit. Of course we do, because it's 2 years.
Yeah, it's a 2 year. So I look forward to new kits. Let's just hope it doesn't have League 2 badges on.
On that note, 20 years ago was the launch of the Dons Trust. Now, we will be speaking to Louise Carn-Kelly over the next couple of weeks about the launch of the Trust, of which she was essentially the key part of doing so and setting the Trust up and the role of it. But during 20 years, what we have to say is, as rubbish as things are on the pitch right now, and let's be fair, pretty much have been since... since Neil Ardley left.
Ardley, you mean after Ardley Ball, as it's now known?
After Ardley Ball, which kept us in League 2, got us promoted into League 1 and got us our highest ever league finish. But, you know, yeah, what a terrible job he did for us, eh? Do you know what? It does bug me, as you can tell, Stu. And I know I'm a Neil Ardley fan, but fucking hell, like... Talk about Sunderland. Oh, yeah, so sorry. Yeah, to go back to my point way at the start of this podcast, Sunderland, right? So this is the fourth season in League One, but they've only visited us once, because in the second season the season was curtailed, so they didn't come because their fixture was towards the end of the season.
Okay.
And then last season it was lockdown. So I'm talking about when there's been fans in the stadium. So it's still a big occasion for us. So the last time I played at King's Meadow, fuck me, if you remember, Sunderland, Lee Catamol scored twice.
That's right.
But what was it, Oviedo? A Spanish international in League One with a handball on the line, right? Not given. Coventry, where we drew 0-0 with them. Scott Wagstaff goes through, gets taken out. You've never seen a clear penalty in your life. West Ham, that was a bit dodgy with the cup. Got done in the end 3-1 in the League Cup. All these results. The Haringey performance was a shocker, but we still won. Yeah. I just think people have got short memories. Anyway, I'd quite happily still, he'd be still in charge, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I remember, I thought you were going to, with Sunderland, we were 1-0 up, and I remember, Oviedo handing on the line. I think it was because he didn't have two hands on it, that's why the referee didn't give it. But I also remember then coming off the pitch, literally, and I remember thinking to myself, Sunderland have just come down to King's Meadow, and they are celebrating like they've just won at Man United. It felt like, you know, we gave them a good game. We gave them a game. And I think that's when it suddenly dawned to me, you know, Sunderland are down in this division and you wouldn't expect them to, you know, normally you'd be expecting to play as Sunderland in a cup, but they're in our league and they were ecstatic at getting 3 points at King's Meadow. That summed up to me where we'd come from. And sometimes you've got to remember that.
Indeed. So, yes, and with, like I said, 20 years, despite the League One relegation battles and the poor performances and results. Yeah, I mean, think where we were 20 years ago. We had nothing, literally nothing. And now we're playing in a stadium. All I remember, Stu, when I was a kid, in my younger days. Oh God, when was I born? 94. So when I was 6 years old, we travelled to Derby County at Pride Park. And we lost 4-0. It was the year we got relegated.
Yeah.
4 second half goals. But as I was getting on the train going home afterwards, pulling out in the distance, you could see Pride Park all lit up with their badge and everything like that. Da, da, da. And I thought, one day we'll have our own stadium just like that with blue and yellow seats and it'll be amazing. And we've got it. Yeah. And I mean, I didn't actually think it was possible. I got to a point where I thought it's not possible. And we made the impossible possible. And I don't think we should have. We take it for granted. I think we take it for granted sometimes.
We do. And look at Derby now. Comparison.
Yeah.
Don't actually own that Pride. They actually don't own that Pride Park anymore.
No.
Mad. You're right. It is mad. I think we always went to ground of our own, didn't we? And I don't know about you, but 20 years ago, if you had said to me, we will get our own ground back in Plough Lane as a League One side, bearing in mind back then, we were told that you couldn't build anything on Plough Lane. There was nothing in the borough. And we just lost our team. Yes, it's ridiculous. 20 years, that's not much in the life of a football club, but we've crammed a hell of a lot in it.
And we've crammed quite a lot into this week's podcast, so we'll call it a day there, Stu. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Updates from the game with Sunderland will be on our Twitter at 9WirusPodcast. 9 News TV will be on this club's official YouTube channel from about 1:30, 1:45 on Saturday afternoon, and then immediately after the final whistle as well.
Sorry, I'm laughing because I stitched Nick up when he was on the other week because I started 1/4 hour too early. That's why I laughed when you said the time.
Can I just say, when I did that show a couple of weeks ago for the Shrewsbury game, there was quite a lot of things missing.
It done so well. I'm surprised you're coming back.
I don't think I've ever padded. Oh my God, the padding for time was horrendous.
What was your filler? What was the filler that you've done?
My filler was, how important is it to have a good surface to play on? Like, my good God. Anyone watching at that point must have been like, nah, it's like, I'm out. But you know what? I say this, but the pitch, Stu, I'm sorry, I hate to say it, those rugby lines are very, very visible.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure the surface is holding up great. Will Grigg, I think, rolled his ankle because the pitch was in such a bad condition.
Really? Okay.
Well, it looked like it to me. He fell. If you watch and I thought it at the time, but if you watch back the highlights as well, it confirmed it to me. They had a chance just before they scored. He rolled it across the 6-yard box and he fell as he played the ball. Okay. I think it's because his foot wasn't planted properly. I could be wrong.
And the pitch has been amazing, hasn't it? Everyone's complimented that pitch. Do you know what I was chuckling about? I don't watch rugby league or rugby union. London Broncos playing. It's just not my sport. But I was confused. I didn't understand the lines. Because if you look, there's like double lines. And I was like, I don't understand. Why do they have double lines? Apparently, it's not double lines. We just didn't measure. We just didn't put them right first time.
Stu, if you want to know more about lines, go to any Premier League away end on a Saturday afternoon. But say no more
anyway
about that. Yes. Moving swiftly on.
Is it just Premier League then? My class.
No, say no more. Right. But you're quite right. Yes, we got the pitch markings for the Rugby League incorrect and have had to redo them. So. Oh well, maybe, I don't know, maybe it helps with offsides. Don't need it for don't need those lines for VAR, do you? They're already on there. All right, but anyway, Stu, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. We shall sign off. There's nothing else I think we need to say at this moment in time. I suppose it's fair to say that the word humour, just so you know, Stu, has two U's in it. Just saying, it has two U's in it. And also, was it Ethan Chislett who picked The Rock over Stone Cold Steve Austin? Incorrect. On 9 years TV, he was given the choice, The Rock or Stone Cold Steve Austin. The correct answer is Stone Cold Steve Austin. Because although people will know more of The Rock because of his moving career, Stone Cold Steve Austin was the biggest star in the history of wrestling. And The Rock never, well, he came close, but he was never as popular as Stone Cold Steve Austin. So, yeah, anyway, that's my rant for this week. Alexa Bliss, bag first, milk last. 2 + 2 = 4. We will speak to you again next Friday.